Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts.
Here we
you don't have to.
Go again.
Here's John Williams.
Yeah, we're here, and we appreciate your being here, too. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 3 o'clock on Saturdays, 10 to noon. On social media, look for me as WGN King John. I'm on Facebook, Insta, and Twitter, and it's WGN King John if you're on social media. Remember, the Mincing Rascals podcast is our weekly conversation. We record here, a bunch of us smart folks. I'm referring to my guests, Steve Bertrand and Justin Kaufman, Patty Vasquez, Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune. Talk about the news each week. We are recording the podcast this week, tomorrow, Wednesday, because of the holidays. So if you're a Mincing Rascal fan, and I know many of you are, it was judged this year the best podcast in the city. We'll post it tomorrow afternoon. One other note about that. We want you to be part of the Mincing Rascals podcast. So if there's a comment that you'd like us to hear, if there's a topic you'd like us to address or a question you'd like to ask, or for that matter, a recommendation, we always close the podcast with something we're eating or drinking, listening to, watching or reading that we think other people might enjoy. And that's always at the end, and it's good. But we'll take your recommendation, too. You've read a book, you've watched a show, you've seen a movie, you've heard a song, you've had a cocktail, whatever it is that you want to recommend, you can leave that with us. If you go to my Facebook page, we've got some videos posted about how we're asking you to do it, but it's real simple. It's just record a voice memo on your phone and then send it to my producer, Elif Garris, and all of that information is on my Facebook page, WGN King John. In fact, you know what, Elif? Now that I've mentioned all of that, we should post that at the top of the page on Facebook. So here we go again. In fact, the headline of the Chicago Tribune editorial today is, "And now a massacre at Mercy Hospital." I got a call yesterday from my brother in Denver. I had just walked in the door last night. He said, "What the hell is going on out there?" He was actually driving through Wyoming, listening to the radio, asking me, "What's going on in Chicago?" Days like this, I find myself clicking around to see how various national media are covering the news. So at 11:30 this morning, I just made a couple of notes. Fox News, top of their page today, "The Perils of Pelosi." They have a story about Democrats who don't want her to be the House Speaker. That's their top story just before noon today.
That could be a huge, I mean, that's a really interesting thing.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely legit. There's no, I chuckle, but only because it's so different than CNN or Huffington Post, say, right? So you knew that they would legitimately find the most interesting story to be that which is most problematic for Democrats.
Right.
"The Perils of Pelosi."
It wasn't about the emails?
No, it was not.
Oh.
They then had a story about charges against Michael Avenatti, the porn star lawyer. That's what they call him. And then they had a story about a bachelor party rafting trip that killed four. And then a story about the little girl in Wisconsin who killed an infant. And then six stories down beneath the digital fold, after a story about an NBA player who got into an argument with a fan, is this headline: "Ivanka's use of private emails baffling, but not on the same level as Clinton." Drudge's top story: "Stocks erase gains for the year." Yeah, we're negative now for 2018, down 530. 530 on the Dow, minus. Huffington Post's top story in the left-hand column are about the hypocrisies of Ivanka's private email. So, of course, that would be their first story. And a story about the chairman of the Republican Party in one Ohio county who says that the fires of California are God's punishment to liberal California. I knew there would be a story like that. After this started to burn, I said to my wife, Brenda, that's her name, I said, "Brenda, I said, you wait, there will be a story." I thought it'd be wackadoodle preacher going, this is God's condemning California for the homosexuals. But instead, it's just the liberals in California. This is God's revenge, said some ding-dong in Ohio. It's not an important story. He's a ding-dong in Ohio, but Lord knows Huffington Post wants you to hear about that. Their second story on HuffPo is the story about Chicago Mercy Hospital shooting. That story is titled, This is Our Lane, and it features doctors and others criticizing the NRA. It's the same angle that the Sun-Times took in its editorial today, which is headlined, NRA says docs should stay in their lane on guns. Tell that to Mercy Hospital. I don't know if you've been following that at all, but maybe you will be now. The NRA a couple of weeks ago posted this. Someone should tell self-important anti-gun doctors to stay in their lane. Half of the articles in the Annals of Internal Medicine are pushing for gun control. Most upsetting, however, the medical community seems to have consulted no one but themselves. The NRA critical of doctors for taking a stand against guns. And a lot of doctors are using the hashtag in our lane today because the medical community is really upset about this. In fact, if you go back to the Tribune editorial, they say that we all have this image of the sanctity and safety of a hospital, and it was so literally and figuratively violated yesterday. Dr. Michael Davenport is at Mercy Hospital, and he joins us now on WGN Radio. He is the chief medical officer there. Dr. Davenport, thanks for joining us. How are you today, sir?
Well, still a little bit in disbelief, but we're all here doing the best we can.
Where were you yesterday during the shooting, and how did it unfold about you?
So I was actually here in my office and with my assistant, who's next door, indicated to me that she thought she heard gunshots. And our first inclination, which may have been the wrong one, was to look out in the hallways and see what was happening. And then we heard over the overhead Colt Silver, which we know is an active shooter, in which case we all closed our doors and turned off the lights and waited for further instruction.
Code Silver is the code you all use for when there is an active shooter on the premises. Have you had a Code Silver there before?
Never.
You've practiced for this, though, I understand.
Yes, all of our employees have been trained in the active shooter drill. All of our leader and management team have been trained a little bit more in depth in terms of that response and leading. And then 2 months ago, we actually had a mock active shooter drill. So that obviously helped us to prepare for the real thing.
Do you feel so? I wonder. I mean, tell me just a little bit about that. I wonder how the staff responded. Was it according to plan? Did that maybe help save lives? What's your thought about that?
So amazingly enough, when it's in times of that type of stress, you're not always sure how you're going to react. But the active shooter drill and what we're trained is simple enough that it's to run, hide, and fight. And probably not to my surprise, but the employees, that's exactly what they did to make sure they protect themselves, protect our patients. And if you probably heard some of the stories of some of our employees speaking to the news impromptu, then that's all of them spoke to, the fact that they did run, they did hide. Unfortunately, no one had to fight. So we're confident that that definitely made a difference. We know for a fact that once we activated the Cold Silver that people did close and barricade the doors, which proved to be very fruitful as the perpetrator, as we understand, was in fact trying to get in to some of the other offices downstairs.
Doctor, I've been reading the press accounts, and of course we all followed it on the radio and TV yesterday, but can you just walk me through briefly what happened? The shooting took place after an altercation. Did the first victim get shot in the parking lot?
So my understanding is that the Dr. O'Neill had finished working her shift in the ED and was going to her car and was apparently fronted by the suspect at that time. And as far as we know that, yes, she was shot in the parking lot.
Right. That's Tamara O'Neill, the emergency room doctor, 38 years old, University of Illinois graduate. It's just everything about this is sad. And then does anybody have any guess as to why the shooter then went into the hospital? If his problem was with her, why did he continue to shoot people?
So it is our understanding from the police department that obviously Officer Jimenez, in responding to a 911 call, did encounter the suspect, which that's when he was shot. And then apparently the suspect started running and ran through the emergency and ran through our hospital. And that is when he encountered the young lady, Miss Les, our pharmacy technician, and just by chance to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and shot her.
Dana Les, the first-year pharmacy resident, age 25.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
What is happening at the hospital today?
So today we are back to operations, not completely. We have a full house of inpatients, and you know, we obviously all of our employees, bless their hearts and their dedication, everyone has showed up. Doctors, nurses, techs, lab technicians, everyone is here, and are taking care of patients. The only thing that we're not able to do is some of the outpatient clinics that we have on the first floor. Our pharmacy, outpatient pharmacy, which is on the first floor, which is obviously those people, you know, that's where Dana worked with them the closest. So we knew we had to close that, and the emergency department also has been closed, as well as some of the other services down on the first floor due to cleaning behind some of the engagement of not just the shooting, but also the officers who came to clear, to make sure it was all safe. It went through the hospital. So the first floor, for the most part, is closed, but otherwise the main hospital, the inpatients, all being taken care of. But we were able to open up our emergency room at 12:30, and we are now once again fully operational down there as well at this point.
One last thing, Doctor. Does this crystallize in any way your views about guns generally? There's this NRA tweet from earlier in the week, the Sun-Times, a couple of weeks ago, the Sun-Times editorialized about it. Other national media are talking about the stay in their lane tweet and the movement that it's now become. What do you have to say about that whole business of doctors opining on guns?
Well, being a physician myself and being in one step with my colleagues, anything, whether it be guns, drugs, anything that hurts and harms the human body, for us as physicians is something that we're obviously going to be against.
Our best to all of you over there. You know, Heidi Stevens said in the Chicago Tribune today that at times like this, our hearts break. They've broken before. They'll break again. And all we can do now, you know, literally as just other citizens, as patients, as family, and as friends, is reach out, show sympathy, hug people, show them that we care. Show them that we care. And I hope you pass that along to your staff as well.
Thank you, sir. I will do just that. Appreciate it so much.
Dr. Michael Davenport is the Mercy Chief Medical Officer. Here's that Sun-Times editorial. It begins this way today. A week ago, the National Rifle Association told doctors to mind their own business when it comes to guns. Quote, someone should tell self-important anti-gun doctors to stay in their lane. End of quote, the NRA tweeted. That was about as stupid a thing as the NRA has ever said, which is some trick, says the Sun-Times. As if spilled blood respects lanes. As if we don't ask doctors every day to save us from guns. On Monday in Chicago, as if to mock the NRA, America's gun violence lurched right smack into the doctor's lane. Tell us again, NRA, how this is not the business of doctors. Tell us how it's not the business of every fed-up American. Those words written by Tom McNamee, and he joins us on WGN. And yeah. Looks like he's busy back there, too. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Doing okay. Hang on a second.
Yeah, go ahead and grab that.
Someone's trying to call me. I'll just have to hang up on him.
What are you, the editor of a newspaper or something?
Yeah, I've been in my office and someone just called. Sorry about that.
I appreciate your time here. I'll just keep you for a minute, but I thought it was just thought. Tom, yeah. Don't you have a secretary or an assistant, whatever we call people that help people these days?
No, we don't have that here. So I think I've killed it. So what's up?
Tom McNamee is the Chicago Sun-Times editorial editor. And then you talk about a variety of things there. But first of all, well put, Tom. I appreciated your sentiments in the paper today.
Yeah, thank you. That, you know, actually the way that worked John, was we were writing an editorial about the U.S. Attorney's Office making a much more aggressive effort to go after gun crimes, people who use guns illegally on the streets for the most part, not the kind of thing that happened at Mercy Hospital. And it's part of this campaign we've been doing all year long to try to push for greater sanity in our gun laws, not to dispel the Second Amendment or to take guns away from every hunter and every old lady in a tough neighborhood, but to just bring sanity. And so we wrote this editorial, and then lo and behold, the Mercy Hospital shootings occurred, which, to be honest, John, did that surprise anybody? I mean, it seems like it's one gun tragedy rolling into the next now.
Yeah, that's kind of what my first reaction was. A, what happened?
Yeah.
B, what context do I put it in? And then what do I say or what do any of us feel that's new? Because these are just too common, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and it's exactly the problem. I don't know. I've been doing this a long time now, and it's sometimes you start to personalize this, or maybe you have to personalize this, or it just washes over you and you don't feel it anymore. So every time you see a 25-year-old kid who's killed just for being a good, or 28-year-old kid just for being a good cop doing his job, we should all look at that 28-year-old cop. Remember, that could be our son, that could be our daughter, that could be our neighbor. I think part of the problem we have in this country is until it hits home, we don't empathize. We don't understand the pain and the tragedy of what's going on all around us every day.
Yeah. Tamar O'Neill was 38. Officer Jimenez was 28.
28 years old.
Dana Less was 25.
25, just a kid. Just a kid. So, you know, yeah. So I think your question to me earlier is, what do you say in a day like this? And yesterday we wrote about the issue of guns. I think today what we'd like to do as a newspaper is just simply honor those people who were killed. You know, we just have to do that. We have to stop, and we have to appreciate who these people were and what they were trying to do, and the decency and the goodness of these people. And maybe that's the best thing we can do for our next editorial.
And maybe not to pick a fight where we have enough on our plate as it is, but this idea that doctors should not be commenting on gun violence, honestly, I don't know how they don't lead on that. They're the ones that have to bandage the bodies up when they come in the door.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. They're the ones who see it more than anybody. You know, as a newspaper reporter, where do you go every time there's a shooting and the editor sends you out on the street at night to cover that story? You go to the hospital. That's where it's all happening. These people are catching every bit of violence in America as it comes through the emergency room doors. And to suggest that somehow they should stay in their lane and shouldn't take position on guns is just ludicrous.
If you read the editorial in the Sun-Times today, I'm short of time, so I'm going to let you go, but I just want people to see what you also wrote about, Tom, in the paper today, and that is comparing the violence in Chicago to New York City, and you make some very interesting points about that. It's not we're better than them or they're worse than us. It's none of that. It's just perspective, and I think you did a real nice job laying that out. We'll look forward to what you have to say tomorrow and in the future, too, Tom.
Yeah, can I just point out what we said about that? That's really interesting. You know, we have five times more homicides in Chicago than they have in New York. The rate is five times higher, which is a stunning thing. The vast majority of those homicides in Chicago are gun murders. If you take those aside, just look at other homicides in Chicago compared to New York, it's pretty much the same. We don't have a problem with more violent people in Chicago. But we do have more guns.
Yeah, that's the point you make. It's that our violence rate is, per capita, about the same, almost exactly the same as New York's. Neither of those are anything to brag about. But the point is, we are more violent with guns. We have a bigger gun problem than we do a violence problem relative to another American city.
Exactly right.
Yeah, interesting point. I'll talk to you another day, Tom. Thanks for your time.
Hey. Take care, John. Bye-bye.
Tom McNamee in the Chicago Sun-Times. He is the editorial editor there. John Williams, do you follow Patty Vasquez? You probably do. I know we all follow each other, so it's easy to let things get
through. I'm always trailing behind Patty Vasquez, yes.
Well, so Patty posted the other day a thing about how somebody knocked at her door. And she says, my husband never wants me to do this, but I answered the door. And she talked to somebody who, this was before the election, was doing some door-to-door soliciting for a candidate. Patty talked to the person, only Patty would, Maybe other people would, but Patty engaged. Patty's very politically connected and astute. She knows what she's talking about. So she said, well, tell me about this candidate for mayor that you're endorsing, that you're getting signatures for. And they had a very nice conversation. Patty seemed to be giving the person her time and thoughts, but in the end, decided not to sign. I talked to her off the air today, and I said, you know, I get like stopped in a parking lot or when I'm walking in the street, and there's people canvassing a neighborhood, and they'll stop me. And I said, I always sign. I always give them my signature because I think, you know, my family and I were sitting around on a sofa. You're out there doing the hard work, stopping strangers or going door to door and getting signatures. Props to you. I said, I've endorsed a number of people or you know, given the signatures.
And you had no idea who they are.
Well, not especially. I was, to me, that's my reward to the person doing the work. I don't have to vote for these people, but if you feel strongly enough about it, I'm going to give you my signature.
And then Nazis make it to the ballot.
Well, she said, nobody makes it to the ballot, John. She said, you can't sign for two people. That invalidates your signature. I said, I can't sign for two people for mayor? She goes, no. I said, I didn't know that. She said, no, I was confused. But on her post, Nick DiGilio also signed in. And Nick said that unless it's a pizza at the front door that I ordered, I don't answer the door.
We're more accessible than ever, and we're less likely to engage than ever.
Here's my question. When there's a knock at the door, what do?
Go straight to the window, but so the person can't see you. And check who it is.
I open the door.
I answer the door, too.
I never answer.
I don't know if this is another male-female thing or old-young thing or six-foot, not six-foot thing.
I can't stand standing around and waiting for the next knock or for them to go away. It's like when they call on my landline now, it's only a charity or someone that I don't want to talk to.
Yeah, we haven't answered our landline in years.
I pick it up because I don't want to hear it ring four times.
I
can't stand that.
Yeah, well, you can pick it up and hang it up, but if you open the door and there's somebody there, now you got to deal with that.
I don't think my doorbell even works. I think I disconnected it.
Knock, knock, knock. What do? There's somebody standing right there. What are you going to do?
You answer it.
How do you buy encyclopedias? I mean, there's a lot of times these days in my building, they'll ding the dong, that's an expression for ring the bell.
Thank you.
Is it?
It'll be a UPS delivery guy, and he's just wanting somebody to let him into the building, into our condo building. And then you buzz them in.
And then you do that?
Wait a minute.
They do that all the time. They just ring a bunch of doors and hope somebody answers.
Do you see that it's the UPS man?
Well, we don't have the ability.
Well, you know there's a problem with that practice, right?
I guess.
I mean, do you say, what are you wearing? What color are you wearing?
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll let you in, whatever.
Well, all right,
I didn't order anything.
Well,
it's the sixth UPS man today.
Yeah, right. I live in a huge building, and they buzz me all the time, and I don't let them in. Because it's like you're letting in a murderer for free. You never know.
You know what? You're not, though. That's the thing. I mean, let's forget that one person is now got access to maybe 25 or 30 doors, if you're a shared space like Elif and I are. But if it's just at your door and you own your home, if it's just your door and it's your home and there's a knock, do you open the door? I'm amazed at how many people don't want to open the door.
Well, but the point I was trying to make, I mean, I do. I open it because I can't stand it. But, you know, people, we don't answer our phone now unless we know who it is. Even though we've got all these different ways to get to us.
Or it's my kids. They know it's me and they don't pick
up.
I'm like, you know it's me. Answer the damn phone.
Or I get a call back from someone. They say, hey, I see you left a voicemail. I'm like, yeah, what do you think? Oh, I didn't listen to it.
Yeah, if you want to waste some oxygen, leave a voicemail on your kid's phone machine. They do not listen to these.
Never.
You are the exception, no. V. Because I'll say, Grant, I left a detailed message. Did you notice that the time on that thing was like 48 seconds about what you need to do about the thing? No, yeah, I didn't listen.
The worst is when it's your parents just breathing into the phone. Or your mom going, hi, it's mom. I know, mom.
Okay, 312-981-7200. I think that we should open the door. Brian, you're on WGN Radio. Hello.
Landshark.
Does everybody get that? Elif, do you get that? Do you know the Landshark bit? Bom, bom. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Funniest thing ever. Funniest bit ever. Yeah, I'm going to find that now. Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
I think the Landshark is over. Is the Saturday Night Live experience still at the museum?
I don't know. I
suspect they did have the shark there.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Barbara, you're on WGN Radio. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I was saying that my daughter lives in an apartment building that has a virtual doorman. So she can put people on the list, and they'll automatically unlock the door. But when delivery people come, they call the virtual doorman. The doorman sees them. It's videoed. And then she lets them into the lobby and then to the package room, unlocks the package room so they could drop off their package. But I said to my daughter, nobody checks to make sure they leave the building, do they?
Yeah, no kidding. So they have access to a vestibule where they can leave the package, but they can't run up and down the hall, but they could still be there waiting when you come down.
But they can use the elevator.
Yeah.
They can use the elevator.
Oh, they can.
Yeah, they have a package room in the lobby. So the virtual doorman can unlock the door to the building and unlock the door to the package room so that the deliveries are put there instead of hanging around the mailboxes. But there's no way to check to make sure the delivery person leaves the building.
Thanks for the call, Barbara. My best to you all.
Thanks. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, have a happy holiday and a safe one. But I think that's the problem. We're all so afraid of our shadow. There's a knock at the door. Bertrand just doesn't want to be bothered with your conversation. I think a lot of us are worried about your conversation.
But I think it also is, though, a younger person mentality. The same way I get about mail, I get about someone knocking at my door. I haven't really grown up in a world where I get mail, other than if they're looking for me for something.
Right.
So if I have a letter, I'm like, oh my God, I wonder what this is. And then same thing if someone's knocking at my door. I don't know who comes up to people's door other than...
How does a neighbor give you a bundt cake? What if somebody said, you know, I've got to meet that lady next door. I have a bottle of wine and we're just going to introduce ourselves. You never will because you're afraid to open the door. By the way, a bundt cake is a small cake that people used to give to each other.
I've asked a neighbor for a cork opener. That has happened.
Knocking away. All I need is a cork opener.
A wine opener. Yeah, I couldn't find it.
Eric, you're on WGN Radio. Hi.
Good afternoon. I don't think there are any men left in the world. I live in a single-family home. I always answer the doorbell without even looking out the window or saying who's there or anything like that.
I hear you, Eric.
I actually didn't go home once because I saw someone standing outside my door. And I was like, God, I don't want to talk to this person.
I understand that. You know, the thing that I've run in our old neighborhood, the neighborhood we lived in last, when there was people canvassing the neighborhood, it was religious people. It was Mormons or somebody, and they just wanted to talk to me about my relationship with God. And I kind of didn't. So... there were instances where we pretend we're not home when we see them coming down our block. And I have actually talked to them before. They're fine. You can say, okay, thanks. We're Catholics and we're cool with Jesus. Bye-bye now. And they get it. You know, they leave. Bill, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Well, I solved the problem because I don't like my wife answering the door either. And I got a Ring doorbell. And it works great. You can see who's there on your phone. Takes care of the problem.
Yeah. That is, I think, I guess I don't have a problem with that. But put it this way, too. Bill, thanks for the call. What if you were a person in distress? What if, you know, there was some emergency and there you are in a neighborhood, and I don't have all of the details, but you're knocking on the door hoping for the kindness of a stranger, and you will be hard-pressed to get it, folks. Listen to me be critical of everybody. Hey, Larry, you're on the air. Larry, you're on WGN.
Hey, John. I'm a retired guy, and I deliver flowers part-time. Now, if for some people that don't answer their doors are my worst nightmare.
Oh, yeah, right, because you've got fresh flowers there getting bad on the step.
Yeah, and then I try to call their number because usually their number is on our delivery tag. And a lot of times,
yeah,
they don't answer the call.
You just got out. Yeah, I got it. But then they don't answer the call. They don't know the number. Yeah, that's a rock and a hard place, isn't it? Robert, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi. Hey, Robert, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm right here.
You're on the air.
Yeah, you're talking about people letting people in apartment buildings.
Yeah.
When my family lived in Chicago, the Somerdale Police District, the policemen were teaching women how to pick locks, and they would get in and with a baby buggy and a couple of kids. Well, our apartment got hit four times.
Wait a minute. Why were they teaching women how to pick locks in case they needed to get in?
They did get in.
Wait a minute. I'm confused. Why would you be teaching anybody to pick a lock?
Because they were crooked cops.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's a bad thing. See what you started, Patty Vasquez?
I'm flattered.
Patty just walked into the studio.
Hi. Now,
you've hit a nerve here.
Apparently.
I'm a door opener, and a lot of people aren't.
I want to be a door opener.
You did. You opened it up for your door-to-door solicitor.
I did, yes, for the collection of signatures, and then I didn't sign it. But I heard them out.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I think, so you and I have two different conversations.
Yes.
Starting at the point of the door. Yours was more about, do you sign the petition? Mine was, do you even open the damn door?
I like opening the door. My husband would prefer that I not.
I understand men who don't want the women in their lives or the children in their lives to subject themselves to a stranger on the other side. But I'm just sorry that we live in a world now where...
Can't open your door.
If somebody needed assistance or if they wanted to do some kindness to you... Or if they wanted to deliver you the flowers that you forgot were coming, or that you didn't know were coming, what do you do if you're sending flowers to your wife and she doesn't know there's just going to be a knock at the door with a guy with a great big bouquet and it can't get in?
I know. My husband thinks that they should just call. If they know you, if it's someone that should be able to reach you, they should also be able to call. By the way, he won't open the door. It's not just that he doesn't want me or the kids to open the door. He will not open the door
either.
Why is that? He doesn't want, if they know him, they should call him.
Right.
I think that you get a lot of, you know.
But Violetta won't even answer the phone, if I'm not mistaken. I think there's a lot of people, they look at the number and they go, I'm not going to pick this up. It's not one of my contacts.
Well, I'll answer it now. But when they go, is this Violetta? I'm like, who are you and what do you want?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they're like, is this Violetta? I'm like, who are you and what do you want?
It's your sister. It's Brenda. Talk to me.
I gotta go, actually.
Right? I like answering the phone and just thinking, let's see what holy hell this is. That's
In our case, it's almost... My wife's phone rings probably 5 or 6 times a day from Dallas, Washington, all across the country.
Right.
Mine comes from LaGrange.
And we do get a call from LaGrange. Yeah. Are you pulling my leg
No, every day usually during the biz lunch, you get a call from LaGrange.
Well... Uh-oh. But Brenda once gave to a politician or a political party, and now we're on the network.
Sure.
And we just get calls from all around the country.
All it takes.
And so you got to answer it every time and say, please take me off your list, or do what we do, just let it ring through.
Or block. You can not block on your cell phone.
You got to show me how to do that.
Okay, sure. I can do that. Give me a phone.
Patty Vasquez, are you on tonight?
I am on tonight.
What time are you on this radio?
I am on tonight from 7 to 11. We've got some good friends from Willow House on the show tonight to talk about getting through the holidays when you've lost somebody. So we have some great conversations. Thank you for letting me pop in. I'm glad that I started a conversation.
I don't think we're done with that one. We'll probably go back to this, but we're done with it for now. Thank you, Patty Vasquez.
Thank you. Have a great day. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hustle chicken.
He's a very accomplished musician.
And yeah, I know.
I don't feel comfortable.
Darn the luck. You're a world-class flautist, and your name's Hafsnirchen. We're here until 3. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio, my dream team. Just once, I want assembled around me a cast to include News, Domati Pongo, Traffic, Violetta Podrometic, Sports, Sam Panionovic, who doesn't work here anymore, but did.
It's your dream team.
I think Griffin Filipich will produce because that's got a lot of syllables and he's very close to me.
I like Domati, but that really hurts quite a bit. What did
he's
you just say?
He's basing it on the names.
Come on.
Solely.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
Well, that's because your name is Steve.
Bertrand. That's been done.
I feel better now. Because I don't like him that much.
I just said, you can just hear the announcer say, now it's time for the John Williams Show featuring Domati Pongo, Violetta Podrometic, Panionovic, Filipich, Panionovic. I had to change my name when I was working in Peoria. They said, you can't have your real name. It's too complicated. And I said, well, please. And they said, nope, you got to change it. So I said, all right, I'll be Williams. people can remember that. And they said, okay, fine.
But when you get to the big city like Peoria, you do what the bosses say.
Totally. I mean, literally the show, because my first radio job ever, I used my real name. My second radio job was in Peoria, and I really needed that job and wanted that job. And they said, it comes with a name change. You can't use your real name. So for 10 years, then I went by that name. Then I got a job in Minneapolis. I got my big break. And when I went there, they said, your news person will be Telly Mamayak. And I said, what's that?
Does that mean looks good on?
I don't even know what a Telly, I don't even know what I just said. Telly Mamayak. What is that? Telly is her first name. Mamayak is her last name. And on weekends, we feature Rashini Kruchkumar or something like that. Rashini, I'm sorry, I'm suddenly spacing your last name. But I had a handle on it once, and you sort of love the authenticity of the multicultural cast that WGN Radio is, or in this case, a station in Minnesota was. But back in the day, oh boy, we got to keep it as, you know, white bread, simple, basic as we can. John Doe.
Now a name like John Williams would hurt you.
Literally. So then it when would. I left Minneapolis, they said, okay, we'll come. And then I got my super big break. I got to come to WGN Chicago. And they said, John Williams, is that your real name? I said, no. They said, what's your real name? I told them. And they go, oh, let's use that. That's a train wreck. And I said, yeah. They said, that'll sound like a real ethnic Chicago name. And I said, yeah, but now I'm so used to Williams that I don't want to go back. So I have two names. And now whenever I make reservations or, I don't know, a lot of times where I need to produce my name, I don't know which one I'm using.
That's funny.
And I changed mine. You know that.
No, I did not.
Wait, you did?
Yeah, I was born Mike Bertrand.
Was Spike Odell? Spike was not his real first name, right?
No, but it was how he was known.
Yeah, everybody. So he was always.
I mean,
known
I think before
no change, yeah,
before radio, him. He was Spike.
Yeah,
I think his dad gave it to him.
What's that? E.
I was going to make the same joke as you, Steve. That's all I was going to say.
Go ahead and make it again. Maybe it'll be funny this time.
My last name's not Garris. It's Garishus.
Actually, how do you pronounce your name in Turkish?
Garish.
Garish?
Yeah.
As opposed to Geris, which is Garris.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's a rundown of our names as the market continues to fall. We're off almost 600 points.
Look this way. Yeah. Actually, it's coming back a bit now because it was down like 640 5 minutes ago. Now it's 590.
Yeah, I got good news. We're only down 590.
Can I just share with you that Kim Gordon loves when I do the play-by-play of the Dow in the afternoon?
Oh, does she really?
It's one of her favorite things.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Well, it would be more fun if it was going up. I did this before the show today actually started because I've been noticing that we've been giving back a lot of the gains for the year, and that's just one of the markers that we use to judge any 12-month period. How did we do for the last 12 months? And for 2018, we are going to finish at this rate down. The market opened January 1st, 2018. So the beginning of this year, we were at 24.7. Right now, we're at 24.4. So whatever you had in your 401k, if you're fortunate enough to have one, if it's in any kind of an indexed fund, you're off 300 points for the year. And this is, you know, amidst a bull market that we've all been enjoying, which started when, I don't know when you're going to say the bull market started, but I did also go back and look to the first day of Donald Trump's presidency, because that was another marker that I think a lot of us were wondering what was going to happen. On January 20th of 2017, so almost, you know, coming up on 2 years ago, the Dow was at 19.8. So as much as you hate the look of 24.4, if on Inauguration Day, or Lord, on Election Night 2016, this is just me doing a little cognitive dissonance here, but if on Election Night 2016 you had said, John, on the close of 2018, the Dow will be at 24.4, I would have said, hallelujah. Because heck, when Trump was inaugurated, it was at 19.8. Would you take 24.4 from 19.8? Yeah, you would. You would make that deal. You just don't like it because we were at 26. I mean, we're giving back not only from the high, but we're giving back all the gains that we had this year.
The other question, though, another way to measure it is from the tax cut, because we're a year from the tax cut. And, you know, that was supposed to be a great boon to business. And
well, it was for a while. I mean, we did see an uptick.
Yes, but we're not there now.
No, and so when people, we got into this.
But the job, I mean, that's one measure. The jobs are great, you know, so, I mean, and that, that presumably tax cut helped businesses hire more people or people to buy more things like that.
I don't even know what the economy is great means anymore, right? Because as soon as you say the Dow, they say, well, that's the wrong index. And when you say the markets, whatever the index is you're using, they say, well, that's not the perfect arbiter of the economy. That's the markets, which tend to lag the economy. So maybe it's jobs. Maybe it's earnings. Maybe it's how much money per hour people are earning. There's lots of different ways to gauge sort of the economic vitality of the country. And you know how the most important one to people is their economic vitality. There's one employment rate, and it's yours. It's either 100% or it's zero. So if you have a job, your employment rate is 100%. Now, the problem with a lot of jobs people have right now is that they're not paying enough. They're starting to catch up. People are getting paid more per hour. But if I open up the phone lines right now and said, tell me about your jobs, we did this about a month ago. The phone lines and text line fills with people saying, wait a minute, I'm earning $15 an hour on my first job and $14 an hour on my second job. And on weekends, my wife and I do this. So maybe better here than where we were. But is it all hunky-dory? The disparity between the well-to-do and the poor or the working middle class in this country is still massive. And I'm not sure that a lot of people who are struggling to figure out how to put their kids through college are all thumbs up about the economy. I think that's a very fair statement on my part. That may sound to you like I'm looking for a way to poo-poo what Steve Bertrand keeps saying is a good economy. But I think that too often I fall into the trap of judging everything by my 401k, and that's not your business.
Well, I agree, and people have to have, you know, because wage increases, wage growth hasn't accompanied the recovery as fast as a lot of people thought it would. It's been going up more recently. You know, but look, you can't deny the fact that there are more job openings than there are unemployed people in this country.
Yes.
That's a pretty
well,
dramatic.
What's the national unemployment rate? It's under, is it 4%? Something like
that. Oh, it's under 4.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, imagine that. That's great. Okay. But don't ask me to open up the lines and tell me how many jobs you're working and how much discretionary income do you have. It's just too many people are struggling because those jobs just aren't paying as much as they should.
There was a study recently about manufacturing jobs over the next 10 years, and I won't remember the numbers, you know, but we talk about that we sort of lament the loss of manufacturing jobs. They can't fill the manufacturing positions that are open now.
Oh, really?
And there's something like there were going to be, I'm going to make up the numbers, 24,000 created in the next 10 years, and only 12,000 will be filled. Whatever the numbers were, it was about half of what will be created.
And why is that? Because schools aren't training kids?
In part because of the training, in part because there are more attractive jobs elsewhere, too.
Right, yeah. If you could be a code writer, you'd be better off being that than a coal miner, a steel worker, or a welder, I guess, huh?
I mean, we romanticize about, you know, manufacturing jobs. I think we might be remembering union manufacturing jobs where there were, you know, people working to increase your wages, not when you were working against the fellow next to you, you know, for who would work for less.
By the way, producer Elif just handed me this CNN.money.com article, Why the Dow Keeps Sinking, this from moments ago. On WGN. By the way, I'm just looking at some of the texts on our last conversation. That is the one we had before 2 o'clock when we were talking about do you let somebody in when there's a knock at the door? Do you even answer the door? And so many of you said no. Our texts include these. John, when I open the door, I have a .38 caliber gun in my other hand in many cases. John, it's too easy for someone to push in. Oh, my God, you let people in? You let anyone in? Why bother having a secure building? 773, it could be a murderer or that shark from Saturday Night Live. 773 said, I spent 15 years living alone in the city. I never answered the door. 847, I live alone. I don't answer the door. 708, from my front door, no one can see me. I never answer my door unless I'm expecting someone. 708, I let my 95-pound Doberman answer the door. 847, I'm a single woman living in a townhouse. I am terrified to open my door. 630, John, my wife doesn't answer the door when she's the only one home unless she's expecting someone because she's alone and there are crazy people out there. John, I'm a female and I do not open the door if I don't know who it is. Every now and then, you got to be reminded of what the real world is like.
Who is it?
Mrs. Robin Lockman.
Who is it?
Plumber.
Plumber? I didn't ask for a plumber. Who is it?
Telegram.
Oh, telegram, just a moment.
Don't open the door! It's a land shark! Land shark. One of the bits he finally figures, yeah, I'm a land shark. Whatever.
Candygram.
Candygram. And I think the thrust of that, the fear wasn't that you really were going to get hurt. It was that you were going to get annoyed, that it was someone that was going to sell you insurance or cutlery or something.
And it's the unknown, which is the whole point of Jaws.
Okay,
and
well,
sharks.
I'm going to stop trying to make this point because evidently it's not all that relevant. But it just seems to me like, what if the person on the other side was a nice person wanting to do you a kindness or a troubled person who needed some assistance and they're pounding on your door and you are afraid? I hate that we are that way. Early morning, stay safe and stay connected with Morgan Kochmeyer's weather forecast and Sarah Gindra's traffic reports. Weekdays 4 to 6 on WGN-TV Morning News.
See that? That's where we are right now. That's the language.
I know, isn't that?
I love Channel 9, but it's all about safety.
It says here, early morning, stay safe. Well, it doesn't say, I think, I don't even know what they mean.
How many people will wish you a safe Thanksgiving as if you're at risk?
They're talking about driving safely.
Okay, but still.
You know, really, just think about this for just a second. Whole books have been written about this subject, by the way. You live today in the safest time in human history. I'm talking about terrorism. I'm talking about disease. I'm talking about land sharks. Human beings today live in the safest time in human history.
And we're scared to death.
Never before have we been more afraid to interact with each other. So I just think a little perspective is worthwhile. Get Black Friday deals before they're gone at American Sale. Save up to 50% on trees, Christmas decor, and more. Trees as low as $79. Choose from hundreds of trees ready to take home. Even hard to find 12-foot trees. American Sale has all your lights, ornaments, outdoor decor, and so much more at the lowest prices guaranteed. The Black Friday blowout event is going on now. See the store for details. 9 Chicagoland locations. American Sale. Bring the fun home. President has issued a statement about his relationship with Saudi Arabia and how they are going to stay a trusted trading partner. And the first sentence is, "The world is a very dangerous place!" Exclamation point. This isn't a tweet. It's a statement from the United States government. And the first sentence is, "The world is a very dangerous place!" Exclamation point. And yes, that is how that sentence is said. Then it goes on to talk about how terrible Iran is and Saudi Arabia is helpful in that region. And so we got to sell them arms or boy, we'll be sorry. We'll be sorry. The best way to know, though, if your news source is biased or not, is to look up the Ivanka Trump story. How ironic that Ivanka Trump, the smartest of the Trumps, and the one who knew well, like all Americans, that you really have to be careful if you're working in the White House, what server you use or what phone you use when you're doing email. How ironic that Ivanka Trump is now said to have been using her personal account for government business. She's an advisor to the president. So the way to know if your news source is biased is that if you go to CNN or Huffington Post, they have articles that are headlined like this, 6 similarities between Ivanka and Hillary. But if you go to conservative sites, if you go to Drudge or Fox News, they'll have 6 reasons these are different. Rick Santorum says, here's how it's a completely different scenario.
How is it different?
Well, for one thing, we don't have any evidence that Ivanka had classified documents on there.
But we didn't for Hillary either until we started looking.
Hillary's stuff was eventually declared classified or secret, not at the time. But, I mean, I'm not going to go down that road. I'll tell you, there are people out there that will make the cases that they are completely different, and there are plenty of people who will make the case that they're completely similar.
Well, they may well be completely different, but I'll just say that at this point, this is like where we were with Hillary Clinton when she gave her UN news conference,
well, then
right?
Let's do this. May I, Steve?
Sure.
Hey, all you Democrats, don't do it. Don't go there. Don't go there.
Well, here, let's get
don't
this.
Don't do it. Come on, you guys.
The House, there are House members already saying they're going to investigate it.
Oh,
when they take, and that's
I
like,
don't care.
Quit it. That's not going to help
this
you.
This is exactly what you wish they wouldn't do, and now you've got it, and you can't help yourself. Attention, Democrats.
But it's not fair.
It was not that long ago that we talked with a ProPublica reporter about some reporting they've been doing, and that is about the number of tickets, for various reasons, that people in Chicago will accrue, how much debt they build up. They can't pay off those tickets. They find themselves in a world of hurt. The city of Chicago is owed a lot of money, but by a lot of people who are unable to pay it, and it becomes an extraordinary financial burden for these people. One of the reporters who's been writing about this is Melissa Sanchez from ProPublica, and she joins us again on WGN. Welcome back to the studio. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me again.
What's the news on this story?
So I'm really happy to report that finally in the past couple of weeks, there's been a number of aldermen and other city leaders and the city itself have made some proposals to make the city's ticketing and debt collection system less terrible for poor people. So among the proposals, the city clerk, Ana Valencia, has proposed making city stickers, a vehicle sticker you need to buy for your car, available in payments. So you can buy it 4 months at a time. So it's cheaper at the beginning to get one. Alderman Burke, the most powerful alderman in the city, proposed overhauling one of the most important punishments that the city has, which is taking people's license away. So now the city, if this goes through, the city would no longer be able to suspend people's licenses without considering their income first.
Describe for me an instance. What are we talking about here? Give me an example of somebody who has tickets and what happens to them.
So a woman I wrote about earlier this year is Laquanda Renault. She's in her mid-20s, has a kid, works full-time, is a student full-time, got a lot of tickets, including a lot of city sticker tickets, these $200 tickets for not having a city sticker when she was a teenager. As a result of these tickets, she's made a minimum wage for most of her life. They doubled, tickets in Chicago doubled, $200 times two, plus 22% interest, $488 times a few tickets is a big debt. When you accrue enough of these tickets, the city gets the state to take away your license, they take away your car. So it becomes more complicated to drive and work and do you know, and live like a good, well, you know, even pay off your debt.
I know that. It seems insane because some people literally will not have the means to pay these compounding fees, but then don't get a ticket. What do you say? Like, why didn't she have a city sticker?
Yeah, I mean, like, and that's the kind of the thing that we've wrestled with this entire time. There's like this moral outrage at this very idea that I get from a lot of people, like, just don't get tickets. Don't be a bad driver. But a lot of these are not tickets for bad driving. They're tickets for being too poor to buy a city sticker in the first place and for living in a neighborhood that's over-policed. What we've found is that Black Chicago is simply more ticketed than white Chicago.
Yeah, but that's because there's more police officers called into or that serve in Black neighborhoods, right?
Right. So if you have a shooting down the block, then there's a higher likelihood the police are going to be in your neighborhood and they're going to spot you.
It's good that the cops are there.
I don't know if I can say that.
Well, I'm going to say that. And then I'm also going to say then, and as there are more police, say, per capita in those neighborhoods, then they are more likely to notice some sort of violation.
Yeah, and I think kind of the thing that I've been thinking about a lot is that these violations have absolutely nothing to do with public safety, and police are spending taxpayer dollars enforcing what's basically a tax law. Folks aren't buying a city sticker. That's a municipal tax.
Well, do you think it is relatively high in Chicago, either the fees or the penalties?
Yeah, for sure. So what we've found is that no other major U.S. city has such a thing as city stickers. The tickets themselves are really expensive.
You said that last time, if I may. You said that last time, and then my phone lines lit up with people in the suburbs who are listening.
In the suburbs. I said major U.S. cities.
Okay, so they don't. So Denver does not even have a city sticker?
I'm pretty sure, no. If it's in the top 15, that's what we checked.
And if anybody does, okay, well, then that is what that is.
Yeah,
and then $200 sounds relative. What is a city sticker?
The city sticker, depending on the weight of the vehicle, is between like around $87 and $135.
Okay.
So a smaller car is like $87
okay,
a year.
So then we have this system, if you will. You better... It's not just the stickers, but just as a, for instance, if you can't pay the sticker or if you can't pay the fine that you've incurred for that violation or for a parking violation, now the meter's running. It's going to compound with penalties, right? Mm-hmm. And now you're on the wrong side of the eight ball. Now you get behind. And your reporting was that some people are $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 in debt, right? People who do not have the means to pay it.
Right.
The city is owed, of Chicago, you said, a couple billion dollars.
It's such a gigantic number that it's not realistic to think the city is ever going to collect in it. The city, there's no statute of limitation in Illinois for this kind of debt.
That's the thing. So what's the moral outrage notwithstanding? This just doesn't even sound like a practical thing for the city to engage in. You're not going to get the money. Stop carrying that number. Let's figure out what a... I'm not saying people should get off. I'm saying, what's a reasonable way to police this?
Yeah, and so some cities are starting to think about this issue. I think that the city needs to reassess the structure of fines and penalties. So there's another proposal by a different alderman, Gilbert Villegas from the Northwest Side, to reduce those late penalties. So instead of a ticket doubling, it would go up by 10%. So instead of 200 times two, it would be $220 for a ticket. I think more broadly, the city needs to look at how it's enforcing these different ordinances, and there's disparities that are really significant.
Well, let's talk about what's happening in Chicago. Anna Valencia is on a phone line. She's the city clerk. She's talked with us about a number of topics, including the city ID, but also this issue before. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hi, John, and hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me. Sorry I was not there in person,
okay.
But I'm so happy to be joining your conversation.
You've heard us chat just now. Based on that, what do you want to say first?
No, I think it's great. I want to first give Melissa a shout out and WBZ and ProPublica for actually doing this due diligence and research and sharing it with our office. I know they came to meet with my team in July, and what I think is so important is they pointed out things that government needs to be aware of. Unintended consequences of policy decisions that we often make. And so I think it's great that we're able to review that and then work with young and community leaders and the people that have been pushing, advocating for a lot of these changes to find out what can we do from just even my office as only one piece of the puzzle or one part of the solution. It's not the whole solution. There's a lot more work to be done, but I think we're moving in the right direction. And so I was happy to work with them and try to develop a solution that was going to help families that are really, to your point, these are people who want to be in compliance, but they may not know about it, or maybe it's a language access barrier. But we have to have a solution that once they know about the city sticker and have to get the city sticker, that there's an affordability for them in our office.
Is the city sticker too expensive out of the gate?
Well, I think it just depends on who you talk to, right? It's all based on your perspective and your lived experience of whether you can afford $87, $82, the 1 year sticker, that's the four passenger vehicle that we mostly sell, or a 2 year city sticker, or is it something like I talk about this with my own father. My dad, you know, we growing up lived paycheck to paycheck based if he had enough work that winter. And so he would want to be in compliance. My dad would never not want to pay a tax. But if we had an option that was a 4 month city sticker, like a payment option, that would allow more families that may be at that cusp of working families to afford a city sticker.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so
you're talking about
based on your own experience.
Are you talking about letting people pay it off of over 4 months, something like that?
Yeah. So you would basically come in our office, you would buy the 4 month city sticker, which would be $29.28. You would leave with a city sticker. Now, you would come back in 4 months or online and buy another 4 month city sticker. So you would still leave with a city sticker, so you wouldn't be...
Oh, I see.
You wouldn't be hit. But there's another component to this. One, there's an education component. and making sure, like I said, about language access, and making sure we have like text alerts and other ways to allow people to know the renewals up. And third, we want to get people to come in the office. So we're looking at a forgiveness program next year when we launch the 4-month e-sticker that would allow people to come in, kind of, you know, wipe their debt from our office and allow them to get on a plan, whether it's a 4-month, a year, or the 2-year e-sticker.
You know, so some of our texts include, if you can't afford the sticker, then don't have a car. Somebody else said, John, I needed Tylenol yesterday. I didn't have a dollar to go to the dollar store. I'm on fixed income. So for some people, while you may roll your eyes at the idea that you don't have 80-some dollars to buy the sticker, some people literally don't have $80 to buy the sticker or pay $200 if they're due a fine. What is Ed Burke saying about all of this?
So Ed Burke, who may or may not be running for re-election next year and wants to appeal to tax to folks in the city, is proposing to substantially change the city's practice of suspending driver's licenses over unpaid tickets. So the city would no longer be able to do so unless, you know, if the person says, hey, I have, I can't, the reason I'm not paying the tickets is because I can't afford to, and they show some sort of proof of income, in which case the city would make, its existing payment plans a lot less terrible. And I say that because right now, if you owe substantial debt, to even get on a payment plan and pay off your debt, you have to pay $1,000 toward that debt. And if you're talking about people like the folks I've been interviewing who make less than $1,000 a month sometimes, then that's just unrealistic.
Oh, really? So they'll say, all right, we'll put you on a reduced payment plan, but you have to put $1,000 towards the debt first. Is that what you're saying?
That's what's currently happening. So what Burke is proposing is, and the existing plans, none of them include debt relief. I mean, you have to pay off every nickel that you
owe. Should we do that?
I think so. I mean, the more I learn about this, some of this debt, I think, was probably unfairly created by inequitable enforcement policies. But what Burke is suggesting is that before you suspend somebody's license, take their income to account. If they're poor or low income or middle income, then instead of requiring that $1,000 down payment to get on a payment plan, allow them to get on a payment plan immediately and pay just a portion of their income.
Well, don't take their car. I mean, now you're guaranteed that person has no income, or right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't understand that. What do you think, Anna, about forgiving some of it? The city doesn't have that capacity right now, but should we just say, all right, half of it's gone or some percentage of it is gone to help people?
Well, I think two things. One, I think the one solution we came up with in the city clerk's office is one, to address one population and one part of the problem. And to your point, I think the worst policymaking you can do is in siloed approaches and piecemeal. So what I think what the next step needs to be is working with the aldermen and community advocates who've been pushing for this and different departments that touch fines or fees to come together and really comprehensively look at this. So if you move a lever here, what does that do? And if you move a lever here, what does that do? In a holistic approach. Because if you try to legislate one area, you may cause another unintended consequences somewhere else. But I think we should definitely look at that. That is why we want to do this month of forgiveness program in our office, because we do realize that people may have so much debt within our office that they may not be able to get into a compliance program. So we want to at least give them wipe the slate clean and allow them to get into compliance. And so I think there's many things we need to look at, and we're just now scratching the surface, and we need to take a deeper dive. And if you look what the work San Francisco did, we've been talking to San Francisco and people out there that have worked on this and been trading different ideas. And I think they've started to really move the needle on this.
I see people with boots on their car sometimes. What's the cost and consequence of that?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I think it's about $130 or so to get the boot off of your car. And then if you don't get it off in 24 hours and the tow truck comes, and then there's new fines, there's a towing fine plus the boot fine, then plus a $20 a day storage fine. I was just going through some of this data with my pal Elliot BZ yesterday. The city tows something like 90,000 cars. About 30,000 of them are for the so-called scofflaws, the people with debt. And what's kind of crazy, what I've been trying to figure out how we can put into a story, is that if your car has been booted, towed, taken away, you couldn't afford to get it out of the impound lot, the city has like now sold it for scrap or basically given it away to the company.
Yeah.
Maybe the company sold it for a couple thousand dollars, whatever. None of that money goes back towards your debt. You still owe the city for the cost of crushing the car, the boot.
Really?
And so there's like, it's a huge messed up, probably, I don't even want to go there.
But I got a solution. Ladies, we'll close on this. Just give me a reaction to this. How about the city of Chicago get rid of the sticker program? Other cities are getting along without it. It's a bureaucratic nightmare, and people don't love complying. Could we find another way to generate $80 per car owner or something like that? Could it just go away? What do we think of that?
It's like the clerk's going to know better. Maybe it's like $130 million a year in revenue. So I think it would be tough for politicians or for city leaders to agree to do that. But I think that we ought to be considering less regressive ways of generating revenue. And this is definitely a regressive tax.
What about that, Anna Valencia? What do you think?
So we bring in $125 million in revenue a year and fund 10 departments. So I don't want to say getting rid of one thing is going to solve the whole solution, because it's sometimes not always that. So we have to also remember that if we want, mentoring services for our young people, we want, things for our schools, our park district, or actually it fills a lot of our potholes, we have to figure out the revenue piece. I definitely agree it should not be on the backs of the most vulnerable in Chicago. And so we need to look at all these practices and ways of redoing our policies. Do we need to lower the penalty to get into a forgiveness program? I met this young mom on the south side, and she was telling me she went to the city and she had $500 to get on a payment plan that day, but the threshold was so high, she needed $2,500. And so we just turned her away, turned her revenue away, and not even allowing her to get onto a payment plan. So I think we have to look at everything. Before we just say, let's just get rid of that, that's going to solve the problem, because realistically, I don't think that's the case.
I'm glad you're talking about this. I'm glad Ed Burke is talking about this. And Lord, we're all thankful that ProPublica continues to report on this. Nice to talk to you, Anna. Thank you for your time. And we'll catch you in the studio next time. Okay, you bet. Bye now. And thank you for doing what you're doing. Keep us posted on this, all right?
Thanks for having me.
Ro and Anna, you kids ready?
Well, couldn't be more ready. As far as you, well, Anna's not ready. Anna's running around trying to find headphones.
I'm not ready yet.
So could be more ready, but also be a viable answer.
I'm going to get her a Q-Matic
I
can see her moving properly.
Totally ready
now. Sometimes we lose her. We sometimes put a bell on her to see where she might be.
Yeah. Saunter around.
If your host can't get up or get to a microphone, hit this button.
Yeah.
Ro, where are you?
Yeah, that's what happens.
What are you going to start with, guys?
Well, I have a couple thoughts on what happened here today, and a couple other thoughts on what we learned about the shooter in the Mercy Hospital situation. So we will talk about that. And then we've got Susie Sunshine's going to explain what happened in the markets here, because there's an actual real technical reason that you're seeing the market sell off in advance of Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. So the fundamentals aren't as bad as that looks, maybe?
Right.
It does look bad, erasing the gains for the year.
Yeah, right. We're down for the year now.
Right.
Right.
And Target dragging down retail. I was just at Target today, so I'm doing my part. I don't really understand that.
Well, you know
that.
What? Now they didn't wait, hold on.
Did they have the latest sales figures? Because I spent a lot.
Back up. Anna was at Target.
I had birthday party shopping, Thanksgiving shopping.
Yeah, she'll explain that. That's coming up in about 10 minutes.
All right, have a good show.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much. All right, John.